Chapter 31. The Ash Witch. In the afternoon before Jen's watch, Fenner and the Shalane invited him to come to the antechamber of the Shalanes to play cards with them in company with Dacen and Eldwina as part of an informal celebration of Dacen's release from Shatan's service. When Jen arrived, they had already started and were so concentrated on the game that only Jaren, standing guard nearby, noticed his approach, nodding his head in acknowledgement. Dacen sat with his back toward Jen. Since his reinstatement to the Dark Guard, Dacen had transformed almost instantly from a slump-shouldered shadow to his beaming, gregarious self. The only thing that hadn't changed was the tender, longing expression that fell over his face with his every glance toward the Shalane. Jen thought the First Mother perfectly justified in her worry over Dacen's feelings for her daughter, and wondered how much of those feelings the Shalane returned. "Ah, Jen," Dacen greeted. "At last we shall cross swords across the card table." Jen genuflected to the Shalane and took his seat next to Fenner, who kissed him on the cheek. "You can see," Dacen continued, "that we have a drink ready for you. Just water, out of deference to Aethon," Dacen winked. "I assume you know how to play Red Wheel?"
"It has been a while," Jen said, "but I think I remember."
"Excellent," Dacen said, shuffling the cards and dealing them with a nimble skill born of much practice. "I must warn you, Jen," the Shalane said, "that Dacen is very good, as is Eldwina. The rest of us can hardly win a round." Jen noticed that Dacen appeared hurt by the Shalane's statement.
"I will do my best," Jen answered, assessing the cards Dacen dealt him.
Jen played conservatively the first round, watching everyone closely. Fenner and the Shalane played for fun rather than to win, while Eldwina was serious and eyed every card laid down. Owing to the Shalane's comment, Dacen purposefully lost, doing what he could to surreptitiously help the Shalane. Eldwina won handily.
"You played very well, Your Holiness," Dacen complimented her fawningly, "but a card or two more in your favour, and the match would have been yours. And Jen, if you wish to do better, you will have to pay more attention to what cards everyone else has played."
"I'll keep that in mind," Jen said, as Eldwina gathered and shuffled the cards for the next round.
As Eldwina dealt and they started playing, Dacen jabbered on with humorous stories of his card exploits of the past, eliciting laughter from the ladies who were clearly enjoying his company. Jen wondered how many hearts the handsome Prince of Tolnor had broken when he signed on to the Dark Guard. Jen was annoyed at Dacen's smooth manner with the women and his affectionate glances at the Shalane, so he exercised what Raphael had taught him about cards. Many young bards survived on what they could win at cards and dice, because the poorer inns that journeymen frequented rarely produced much in the way of income from musical exhibition. After a few games in Tell, no one would play cards with Raphael anymore, and once Jen had reached the age of 15, Raphael finally thought him old enough to bestow all of his techniques, some rather underhanded, for winning the major card games played in courts and taverns alike. Despite this training, Jen never could consistently beat Raphael, and he suspected his master kept back some of his masterful methods for himself. Jen could, however, beat anyone else he knew. In the next hour, Jen won all but three hands, despite Dacen changing games twice and abandoning his attempts to aid the Shalane by losing. Dacen poured all of his effort into strategy and examined every card Jen played. Eldwina started slamming her cards down and swearing near the end, and the Shalane called an end to the games, claiming she was tired, when it appeared that Dacen would force them to play until he managed to defeat Jen. Everyone rose and left, Jen feeling quite smug, until Fenner gave him a cold farewell, and left, escorted by Dacen. The Shalane dismissed Eldwina for the evening so she could spend time with her family, and the handmaiden shot Jen a withering look before stalking across the bridge.
"You know, Jen," the Shalane commented as they rose and worked their way through the maze, "it is ungentlemanly to win so much. I think it would be doubly so in your own country."
"Among nobles, I suppose," Jen answered, realizing guiltily that he had let his desire to punish Dacen ruin everyone else's fun. "Raphael taught me that in cards there are no gentlemen, only winners and losers. I apologize for blemishing Dacen's evening. I will simply excuse myself from playing from now on."
"I hardly think Dacen will let you get away with that. He will pester you to play unceasingly until he has mastered you. There is another solution, however."
What is that? Tell me how you do it. You cheat, I imagine.
It's not all cheating, Jen replied defensively.
I'm sure. Tell me how to do it. I've got the cards right here.
Why would Dyson leave me alone if I taught you to win at cards?
Because he will be too distressed over being trounced by a woman. So what do you do? What did Raphael teach you? I want it all.
You can't ask me to do this, Jen protested. I'm not going to be the one who corrupts the holy Shalane by teaching her how to cheat at cards. What would the Padre Athan say about me then?
I thought I was talking to Jen, not Dyson. You will teach me. I'm so tired of Dyson letting me win. If I can beat him all the time, he'll stop. If it helps your conscience any, just think of it as teaching Alumira, not the Shalane, how to cheat at cards.
As you wish. Jen rubbed his chin speculatively. Actually, if you have two people cheap working together in a game,
that's more like it.
And you have the clothes for it, Jen continued. You could hide 50 decks of cards in those robes, and the veil makes it impossible for anyone to see if you're nervous and shifty. You could be formidable indeed.
But I do require something in return.
Such as?
Such as putting in a good word for me with Fenner. I think she despises me right now. Done.
For the next several hours, Jen taught the Shalane everything he knew about winning at cards, and she absorbed it enthusiastically. Her mind was sharp, and, beneficially, she had dexterous hands. By the time she finally went to bed at well past midnight, Jen realized he had created a monster. He cautioned her not to start winning all at once, lest she rouse suspicion. He could sense that she was awake a good while before she fell asleep, no doubt anxious with anticipation for the next opportunity to smash her entire acquaintance at cards. Near the end of his watch, Jen heard footsteps approaching, and they were too light and coming too quickly to be Jaren's. A servant emerged from the maze, huffing a bit as she delivered her message.
Chatan requests the Shalane's presence and your own in the library in half an hour, Lord Blackshear. The First Mother was summoned as well.
Thank you, Jen said.
The servant bowed and left as hurriedly as she had come. Jen knocked on the door and relayed the message to a sleepy Shalane who yawned and promised to come shortly. Jen wondered what Chatan was about. As the First Mother predicted, since the arrival of Kaimas, Chatan had changed his behaviour a great deal. Jen saw him rarely, but when he did, the Haulric forwent his usual unpleasantness and behaved with civility, if only a practised one, toward the Shalane and those close to her. Kaimas himself was rarely seen, but his influence hung palpably over Chatan. The rough edges only surfaced intermittently, especially when he drank. While Jen doubted Chatan had changed in a sincere way, even a feigned sense of propriety was better than none at all. When a yawning Shalane was ready, they left, meeting Jaren in the antechamber. He took Jen's place behind the Shalane, and the Shalane took Jen's arm and pulled him next to her.
What do you suppose this is all about? She asked quietly. It is rare enough for Chatan to summon you to anything, much less early in the morning. I am quite concerned that something terrible has happened. You haven't offended Padre Athan again, or anything, have you?
No. Athan has avoided me since I disappointed him by not being sloshing drunk the other night. I'm at just as much of a loss as you are.
When they arrived at the library, Chatan and his new guard, a Captain Drockley, were there, Chatan sitting on the couch where Jen usually read. He rose, smiling, bowing for the Shalane before taking his seat again. Mirel and Cadean sat across from him, and Athan frowned upon seeing the Shalane escorted by Jen, though Jen noted a certain self-satisfaction in the way the Padre carried himself. Mirel stood and greeted her daughter and Jen, offering her seat to her and taking her place at Jen's side.
What is this all about, Chatan? The Shalane asked.
Patience, my dear, he said happily. We await the mages and Regent Ogbith.
They didn't arrive for several more minutes, and an uncomfortable silence hung over the small assembly. Ethris and Kaimas came one after the other, and Regent Ogbith, who had to be fetched from his residence in the city, entered last, eyes bloodshot.
Excellent, Chatan began, standing. I apologize for the early hour, but messages arrived late last night that I was sure you would want to hear immediately.
Jen caught the brief flash of surprise on Kaimas's face. Chatan had not apprised him of the letters yet. The Ulrich shuffled the papers in his hand.
The contents of the messages will affect Jen the most directly. So if you would like to sit...
No, thank you, Jen declined.
Very well. The messages are long, so I will summarize. First, Cholnor has surrendered and is now under the control of my father.
Jen's heart sank, and Mirel tightened her grip upon his arm.
Your deposed King Fillingrail is in hiding, but despite this, my father will allow the leadership of your duchies to remain under the control of the dukes, as long as they swear fealty after the Tolnorian fashion to my father, and accept the presence of a warlord to help direct the affairs of their respective regions. Even you, Jen, will have to admit that this is a generous concession indeed.
Jen knew that it was, but he said nothing. The thought of Ogmir controlling Tolnor in any degree was abhorrent to him. While he knew it unlikely, he had hoped Tolnor would provide a fierce enough defence to force Cairn to abandon his war.
As the new king of Tolnor, Chetan
continued, paraphrasing from the thick letter in his hands,
my father informed the church that Tolnor is again ready to honour the Fidelium, and that I will march in command of the full strength of the nations of Kihol when the time comes for war against Mikik. He expresses his regret over the lives he took in defence of the Fidelium.
Jen thwarted a strong impulse to laugh in derision at the Shadan's disingenuous piety.
The second message is also from my father, and concerns Jen particularly. Under my direction, and as part of my gratitude for Jen's distinguished service to my sublime fiancée, I asked my father and Kaimas to see if they could find any of Jen's friends or acquaintances from Tell that might have survived. I am happy to report that some were found.
Jen's heart leapt in his chest. Chetan continued.
It says in the letter that there are five persons, a Mr. and Mrs. Morwald, their daughter Mireia, and two youths named Gant and Yurl. He writes that Jen would know them well.
All eyes turned to Jen, who was fighting with conflicting emotions.
I do, he said. I thank you, Your Grace.
For the first time since the day Chetan arrived in Rugarth, Jen genuflected to the Ha'ulric. Aethon was visibly pleased, though his smile touched nothing but his lips.
They are being conveyed to Rugarth as we speak and should arrive before the end of the week. Well, that is all. I will leave this first letter with the First Mother and Regent Ogbith for further perusal, so that they can fully understand the arrangement my father has negotiated during Tolnor's surrender.
Chetan rose to leave, but Aethon stepped forward quickly.
A moment, Your Grace, he said. I have an announcement of equal import, if you'll forgive me.
Chetan, perplexed, took his seat.
Say on, Padre. I am pleased to announce that our investigation into the Burka pattern has at last yielded fruit. We have caught the criminals, and they will be executed in the main square shortly. I have riders spreading the news now so a sizable gathering can be ready. It is important this be as public as possible to restore faith in the people. The Shalane and the Ha'ulric will not be permitted anywhere near the spectacle, of course. I am leaving directly to attend.
What?
A shocked Mirel burst out, releasing Jen's arm.
You order a public execution without my...
Aethon,
Ethrys said loudly, cutting the First Mother off.
Who did you catch? And how?
The worry in Ethrys's eyes, reflected in those of Kaimas's, took Aethon aback.
My men were inquiring about town when a man tipped us off to the presence of an old witch living in the Damned Quarter. We raided the place late yesterday afternoon and found an old woman and a man there with several drawings of Burka patterns in their possession. We immediately ordered everyone out of Baneborough Cathedral and imprisoned them in the catacombs under magical guard.
What did they look like?
Ethrys prodded impatiently.
Fairly nondescript, from what I heard. Both 40 or 50 years old, dark hair. The man had one blue eye and one white. You know something. Out with it.
A breathless Padre Nolan, entering the room at a jog, surprised everyone.
Your Grace, a moment.
Is this about the detainees?
Aethon asked.
Yes, Your Grace,
Nolan replied, wiping his brow. Then you can speak. They know.
Very well. I was there when they removed the prisoners from the cell this morning. I don't understand it, but instead of an old woman, a girl,
Caimus exclaimed.
You fools! You have no idea who you're dealing with.
What? Mirel inquired, a puzzled Aethon shouting the same inquiry.
Are they still headed toward the square?
Athris questioned, ignoring everyone.
Yes,
Padre Nolan answered, perplexed.
We figured it Ilk's work.
Mirel,
Athris explained, voice barely restrained.
That square has to be cleared.
Who is it, Athris? Caimus,
Aethon yelled. The two magicians glanced at each other before answering in unison.
Our mother.
How could your mother be a girl?
Padre Nolan asked.
Our mother has been alive since before the Shattering, Caimus explained uncomfortably. She dies every day. At sundown she crumbles to ash and is reborn a babe, aging throughout the day. It is the price of her immortality, a corrupt gift from Mikik to her. The only time the cycle is stopped is when she is with child, as she was when she bore triplets, Ethris, Dethris, and I. She has children often simply so she can live normally for a while. I'd wager half the students in the academies of magic over the years were her bastard children.
Your mother is a witch, then? An evil witch?
Aethon exclaimed.
She is a mage, yes,
Ethris said gravely.
The most powerful alive, I suspect. But explanations can wait. You must stop the carriage and clear the square, now.
But we have her under guard of three padres,
Padre Nolan said. Surely she is contained or can be killed.
No, Caimus rebutted. She is only caught when she wants to be caught. You take her to that square and she will kill hundreds, if not thousands.
Then we should kill her while she is in the carriage,
Aethon argued,
when she isn't suspecting it.
You can't kill her,
Ethris said.
Nonsense,
Aethon objected. She can die, can't she?
Yes,
Caimus said.
But it will take a Triss magician or extraordinary luck to do it. You know the legend of the Ash Witch, don't you? She is the Ash Witch. Mikik appointed her to be an elder to sit in Owena's throne as goddess when he comes to power. He remade her a pure-blood Min magician and Dwarm magician. My brothers and I are but half-blood. Your best padre is likely quarter-blood at best.
So are we supposed to just let her go?
Aethon asked incredulously.
If you are wise, Ethris answered, you will do just that. Walk away. She will still kill, but not thousands, as she will if you continue this course.
I cannot in good conscience do such a thing. How could we face the people?
Aethon said. He turned to Padre Nolan. I will communicate to them to turn back to the damned quarter in the cathedral. We will kill her there. You watch through Padre Gray's mind. I will contact Padre Tremaine.
It will fail,
Caimus yelled.
Listen to me!
But Aethon had closed his eyes. Your Grace, Ethris said to the First Mother,
send word to clear the square.
Mirel turned to Regent Ogbeth, who nodded his head.
I will see it done,
he said, leaving quickly. The room fell silent. The two padres concentrated, faces serene. No one moved or even fidgeted, watching intently until the padres' faces contorted in pain and paled. For several moments they didn't breathe.
They are under attack, Padre Aethon uttered through clenched teeth. We're trying to assist.
The words struggled from his mouth as his breath returned, laboring.
Get the Shalane out of here,
Mirel commanded. The Shalane stood and left quickly with Jaren behind.
Perhaps I should leave as well,
Shatan said uncertainly.
Come, Drockley.
Can you help them?
Mirel asked Ethris after Shatan left.
I...
Both padres screamed, grabbing the sides of their heads as if to hold them together. As one, their eyes snapped open and they fell, shoved to the floor by some unseen force.
Ethris!
The First Mother exclaimed worriedly.
The contact is broken, Highness,
Ethris said calmingly.
They should revive momentarily.
Ethris crossed to Aethon, signalling for Caimus to check on Padre Nolan. Both padres lay still for nearly a minute before stirring. Blood ran from their noses and their hands shook as the old magicians helped them onto the couch.
Such power,
Padre Nolan exclaimed.
She attacked me through Gray's mind, through my own link.
"'And me through Tremaine's at the same time,' Padre Athan added angrily. "'We must get news of what happened.'
"'Regent Ogbeth will see to that,' Merrell said. "'I will send for the other Padres to attend you.'
"'So,' Athan said, gathering himself and glaring at Ethris and Caimus accusatorily. "'You two knew who inscribed the Burka pattern, didn't you? "'And the fires?' Your mother is the Ash Witch, and here you are in the service of the Ha'ulric and the Shalane. Merciful Eldaloth, you should be dismissed for this.
We did not know it was her for certain, Ethris returned with equal acrimony. She was certainly a suspect, but there are others who could have done it. Jiran isn't one you can send soldiers out searching for, even if you know where to look for her. Your three dead Padres will be evidence enough of that.
So Jiran is her name, then. Sounds harmless enough for someone of such frightening power. And who is the man with the strange eyes? Athan asked, still incensed. The Ilk? Some other magician?
We have no idea, Caimus answered.
Wonderful, Athan returned, standing unsteadily. We will have an inquiry about you two. I doubt even Mirel wants you around after these startling revelations. You are practically Mikik's stepchildren.
I doubt Mirel is as stupid as you are,
Caimus growled.
How dare you address a Padre in that fashion?
Padre Nolan yelled.
Gentlemen,
Mirel interrupted, that is enough. Let us assess the situation, and Padre Athan, surely you must see that whatever their genealogy, Ethris and Caimus are the best protection against Jiran we have. Ethris has served long and well, so calm yourself. Panic and accusations will do little good now.
Come, Padre Nolan, Athan said, ignoring Mirel. We have work to do.
We should head into the city, Caimus said to Ethris. We may be able to prevent further damage.
Your Grace, Ethris asked.
Go, she said, running her hands through her hair.
Come with me, Jen. I want to see my daughter.